Blog Talk Radio.
This is not a drill. This is not a drill. General quarters. General quarters. All hands on your battle stations.
Welcome to Midrats with Sal from Commander Salamander and Eagle One from Eagle Speak at Sea or Shore, your home for a discussion of national security issues and all things maritime.
And welcome aboard, everyone. I'm your host, Sal, from the blog Commander Salamander, along with my co-host, the ever-genial Eagle One of Eagle Speak. We're back live this week and back to the Navy realm. And as a reminder to those who are with us live, make sure and join the chat room at the bottom of the show page with the usual suspects. If you have questions or observations you want to share or point you would like for us to bring up with the panel, Eagle One will be writing Herd on the chat room, and he'll fold in those contributions and ideas as the show goes forward. And if you're new to Midrats or if you want to catch up on some of the shows you've missed, you can listen to the archives over at Blog Talk Radio. They've changed the format there. You can no longer download it. So I always recommend to people, hey, you can't beat the price. Get a free iTunes account. You can get the show over on iTunes. You can download it that way and listen to it at your leisure. Now let's get on with the show. The news, one of the pieces of news this week in the Navy side of the realm, is the Army decided to take the J out of joint and kick all of its joint high-speed vessels over to the Navy. And it's funny about this particular ship, and this is the question that I'll lead things off with, is there is a fair bit of interest in this ship. And we decided to do something a little different today with the format. Instead of your typical interview, we're going to do a panel. And to discuss this, two of our good friends to the show here, our panel guests will be John Patch, Commander, U.S. Navy retired. He's the Associate Professor of Strategic Intelligence at the U.S. Army War College's Center for Strategic Leadership. And Lisi, a former SWO who has managed sea lift ships for the Military Sea Lift Command since 1980, to include the original charter of the high-speed vessel Westpac Express. John and Lee, welcome to Midrats.
Great to be here.
Good to be here.
Thanks, guys. And just to let our listeners know how the format's going to go, as usual, Eagle One and I will be bouncing the questions back and forth, and we'll direct a question to one of our panel members. They'll take a couple, 3 minutes to respond. Then the other panel member on the same question or point will either pick up a point that our previous panel member took and run forward, or just respond directly to the question in their own way. And John, I wanted to kind of lead the first question off to you. Is, when you look, just a quick flash at the Joint High-Speed Vessel, which, as I mentioned on my home blog earlier this week, we really got to find a better name for. It's an awkward acronym, and it's a mouthful to say. But it's a 338-foot ship, 2,400 metric ton little transport. But it gets a lot of interest. A lot of people are trying to figure this out, what to do with it. Why do people care so much about this little ship?
That's a great question. It is getting a lot of coverage, probably more than other classes of ship, which is a little surprising. And my guess is because mainly it's, I think, the Marine Corps interest. Army was interested for a while because of the sort of innovative ability it offered to move a large amount of cargo around theater pretty quickly, you know, intra-theater lift. I mean, a lot of people at the Army War College compare the JSV and what they see as the JHSV as it comes online as sort of a C-130 equivalent, you know, for the surface. Small intra-theater, but, you know, carry a lot of stuff, a lot of beans and bullets to the fight quickly. However, you know, it's got its shortcomings. I'm sure we'll talk about it at one point in the show, so I'll leave it at that. But it's very innovative. I think it gets some attention because it's an odd design, you know, the catamaran hull. The version of the LCS that's the similar type of hull gets a lot more attention than the basic monohull, and it's just an interesting looking scientifically innovative hull that gets a lot of attention because of that. It is kind of interesting that the Army has said no thanks, not interested in that anymore. And it's not just the J JHSV that they're not interested in anymore. They're, as you probably know, they're divesting largely anything maritime over to the Navy, trying to concentrate on core missions and not have to worry about peripheral things. And my guess is that will occur across the board as well with their small hovercraft and their LCU-type equivalent in any last little bits of the riverine-type warfare that they had, units, et cetera. So we'll see how that works. But who cares about a low-end mission, essentially, you know, a fast barge, which it really is, to a degree? That's a great question. However, if you look at the current maritime strategy, get back to the baseline of our strategy first, it has lots of missions for low-end ships. Current maritime strategy, you know, shaping in the phase zero part of the fight. Captain Hendricks's influence squadron idea that you could take smaller low-end ships, maybe single mission or small multi-mission ships, put them in the global fleet stations, bring them down to West Africa Partnership, perhaps put them off the coast of Somalia to do anti-piracy, etc. You can have a fairly significant impact with engagement, with capacity building, with just maybe simple presence, you know, small hull, but, you know, you could raise the American flag and pull into small ports like Djibouti. So you can make, you know, combatant commanders love these things because you can carry out smaller but still important aspects of, you know, the theater security and cooperation plan, you know, the TSCAP in theater. So I think that's why it still gets quite a lot of attention. They want to do these small missions. Big Navy, however, the four stars, the three stars, are not too interested in these smaller things. They'd rather focus on the bigger capital ships, but there absolutely is a purpose for these low-end ships. They're still very important. They definitely have a role.
Lee.
Yes, that's a pretty good summation of it. I think that the pros that we need to focus on with the JHSV is that it fills a gap. It fills the high-speed, medium cargo payload gap that none of the U.S. forces had up until this point in time. I think the Marines are really looking for it to go up the coast and send a force up the coast to an austere port or a quote benign situation to move a small amount of Marines around. It can do that far better than either LCS. The other thing is that this is very, very much an improved version of the WestPac Express. This is, and she's been charging along since year 2000, hauling three MEF Marines around WestPac. And so the Marines are going to like it for that. They're going to need transport to move Marines from Okinawa to Guam and back. This to the Marines is their big surface connector ship that they really want, and it's got a lot of capacity such that can be improved upon too.
Well, let's talk about that need, this gap that it fills. I mean, I'm kind of curious as to who foresees this need to move 300 Marines at a time plus associated equipment at a high rate of speed up to 1,200 nautical miles. What are those mission areas that they're looking at that this vessel is the answer to?
Okay, there are two areas. Let's talk a little technical term here for administrative lifts, which is what the WestPac Express is doing. This is an ideal size vessel. The 3MEF Marines expressed that desire to me back in the year 2000. It takes the place of ARG Bravo, which went away many, many years ago, and that was their administrative lift. Talking to some folks in the modern Marine side of the house, it gives them the ability for small unit, this company size movements, coming off of either a sea-based ship, say perhaps an MPS ship sitting way offshore, or for that matter, even coming off of an amphib, taking a small unit and saying, "Hey, we gotta send this company 200-300 miles up the coast to do a flanking, to do an end around, or we got a hot spot there, we gotta do it." So that's not the administrative lift. That's the actual combat mission, or I shouldn't use the term combat, low phase mission that the Marine Sea is for. So there's at least two sections, two areas that the JHSV can help the Marines.
Yeah, and I'd obviously say that it clearly has a role with the sea basing concept as well. I mean, obviously there's a whole other platform coming online down the road. At least it's being funded to develop a new connector, and lots of them, because you know that sea basing concept with the larger ships with the offshore platform that goes up alongside it to marshal the forces, it's still got to get all the equipment and all the people to the beach quickly. So you need connectors, and you need a ton of connectors. My guess is that even with all the LCACs, the follow-on LCAC, and this connector that's being developed, we'll still need support from more vessels too. So my guess is the Marines would see a role for the JHSV to act in that capacity too, to quickly get the logistics, the people, the beans and bullets to the beach, and because it's got that onboard sort of berthing capability for 100 or so Marines, it's got hotel services on board that they don't have to put an extra module on to take care of. It has a great amount of appeal, especially when that connecting distance from that sea base to the beach is fairly long, fairly far out to sea. So my guess is it has a very significant role as an augmentation connector for the sea basing concept.
Yes, you're right. In that area, the Westpac Express makes the 1,100-mile trip from Okinawa to Guam, running somewhere north of 27 knots. And because it's a fairly short duration trip, they don't have the berthing spaces that the JHSV does. All the troops are in airline style reclining seats, and they're basically crapped out in the seats for the trip. They don't have the full blown berthing modules, and of course if you look at the recent study done concerning putting EXW or Marine capability on the LCS, it's a nightmare. Compared, the JHSV has much more capability in this area, and they're basically short duration trips. They're not going to be the week long, the 2 week long trips that the Marines have done in the amphibs of the past.
John, we were talking about, and Lee's outlining some of the missions it's doing right now. When I look at the recent history, first I want to start with Haiti. I thought when the response to the Haitian humanitarian challenge took place, the Marine Corps was really smart, and they jumped out real fast, as did the military sealift command community, trying to show that it's not just your hard power, but soft power, the sea lift, this ability to transport material to places that's semi-permissive, not because somebody's shooting at you, but because everything has been destroyed. Haiti's one example. In Libya, when we were having to beg, borrow, and steal a Maltese ferry to get the Americans out of the Benghazi area, I think was another point that we saw. And you can keep going from here, the response to tsunami. And when you look at what the Joint High-Speed Vessel can do besides the 313 Marines, it's CH-53 capable. I even have seen a mock-up where they can do a 2,200-square-foot combined operations center, CAOC, on board the ship. And you also mentioned in the first response to the first questions about Jerry Hendrix's influence squadron concept. We've only got a few ships here right now, but with the proven track record that the Westpac Express has had, we got the potential here for a ship with minimal technology risk and a lot of flexibility due to square footage. We could really do some interesting things. Do you see this as a force expansion piece of equipment, or something that can substitute for equipment and platforms that we already have?
Probably a little bit of both. I mean, because of its, you can innovate, you can sort of adjust it to what your needs are, you can adapt it. It's just got so much potential with the very large cargo space, some of the features you mentioned. I can't help but think of the Georgia example when we sent, when we moved some humanitarian supplies from one port to another in the Black Sea, and we ended up using a Coast Guard cutter to do it. And I think a DDG actually came in there and helped out as well. And I was like, yeah, be kidding me, moving logistics on a Coast Guard cutter or a DDG, they're absolutely not designed for that, not optimized. So my guess is it was a very small footprint of cargo that they moved around and probably didn't have a whole lot of influence on the fight or on the humanitarian situation. You know, imagine in its place a JHSV, that the flexibility that gives the combatant commander to move very large amounts of cargo, humanitarian, emergency supplies, medical, even, you know, you can just bottle water very quickly, you know, across with the high speed as well as the very high cargo capacity. Yeah, so it is. I think it's an enabler for multiple innovative missions like the influence squadrons and humanitarian disaster and relief, as well as other roles. When you're talking about moving the back to the sea base, moving the heavy stuff to the beach quickly, that would have a role in, you know, in O plans, con plans, and other strategies where. In other plans where you need that rapid connector to move a lot of stuff to the beach quickly associated with conventional ops, supporting Marine Corps things or otherwise. Very innovative. And I think offline, we talked before, it's right offhand if somebody said what would be an ideal use of the JHSV right now, I would say it's even beyond that HADR mission into other areas. And for one that comes right offhand is along the lines of the CAOC role that you mentioned, is that connectivity, that flexibility of the platform. You could put law enforcement detachments on there with their RIBs, with their other, their armories and other things that they need to do law enforcement operations, perhaps a small module that contain a small brig to actually detain personnel. You put that thing with its shallow draft close to the Somali shore with a very visible presence with just a handful of those. My guess is you could cover a pretty respectable amount of coastline with a law enforcement capability from a JHSV that can quickly, in interior lines, get from A to B very rapidly to respond to through some ISR to what's viewed as a potential pirate skiff or pirate operation occurring. I mean, you could have a very significant effect and relieve those shooters, the high-end Aegis cruisers and destroyers for the more important missions that the combatant commanders need them for.
That last point was a real good one. We certainly don't need DDGs doing transport missions and hauling around detainees, shall we call them. There's two aspects that John did mention that are probably should be mentioned, and that is that the JHSV has a significant capacity for putting containerized medical treatment facilities on board. So you've got like a mini hospital ship, or at least a ship with a significant medical capability that you can put into small ports where needed, either on an emergency basis or on a station ship basis. And the absolute key that the Navy has completely overlooked in a lot of their amphibs is that the JHSV has a ramp to put the cargo ashore with, and has a crane to pick up boats and larger objects from the water and move them around with. Something that in some ways the ship has better connectivity than gators. But those are two important things that really add to the ship's capability.
One of the people on our chat room, a Turkish blogger known as Saturn 5, who has his own blog, we were talking with him about the Turkish use of some very similar vessels to do their evacuations, civilian population evacuations from Libya, and which is another mission that these things could clearly carry out. Although he does point out that they didn't have sufficient hotel facilities for the passengers that were being removed. With 300 Marines and all the associated crew and all that, what are there beefed up facilities to take care of the people there for food and other hotel type services for this type of vessel, or are they going to be eating MREs regardless? I mean, it's a short duration mission, but how are we going to work that out? How does that look?
I can't tell on a JHSV. I'm going to find a document that leads it out, but I'll tell you how they do it on Westpac Express. The Westpac Express has what you would call, a McDonald's style service bays. Okay. That are crewed by Marines to provide them quick meals, fast meals, and they have, I think, six or eight dining tables You sit around, you know, like in the McDonald's. You go up and get your chow in shifts. Eat your food at the table, then go back to your airline style seats to for the lake out afterwards. They don't have a galley per se. They don't have, you know, regular cafeteria type service like you do in a lot of ships. So if think of it that way. At least that's the way it's done on the Westpac Express. I'm presuming it's the same way on the JHSV.
Yeah, from what I can tell from the documents online from Austal, it's pretty kind of limited. Certainly, the important point is it's much better than the LCS. So if you think you can do that kind of thing off an LCS, extremely limited ability, because you're essentially bringing on, there's not extra berthing. I mean, you got the very small crew and a limited little extra capacity for berthing for the detachments that come aboard for the unmanned vehicles and the modules and that kind of thing. But when you go beyond that basic footprint, you really strain in the LCS capability to do anything. And they found that, for example, just bringing a 10-man boarding party to do maritime intercept operations required is just a disastrous impact on the galley, on the shower facilities, all the other things. It's just absolutely, you know, you could put 3 or 4 models on there with plenty of racks. It's the everything else that just way too much impact. It looks like the JHSV has a lot more flexibility with that. It looks like up to about 150 troops, not just for berthing, but for galley and food support. Now, that's not a ton of troops, but, you know, a lot more in the modules on the deck where you could do the kind of service that looks like is occurring on the Westpac Express. But, you know, better than the LCS for sure for that kind of hotel services, but not dramatic, you know, maybe twice to three times as good as an LCS, but that's about it.
Well, is that a limiting factor? You see it on its use for something like an anti-piracy mothership off the coast of Somalia, the fact that it may have limited duration in terms of taking care of the people who are actually doing the small boat ops and all that sort of mission out there?
I don't think so. Those deaths are pretty small. The detachments themselves, 10 law enforcement types, one officer in charge, one assistant, they have the folks that take care of the ribs and other things, and these are fairly small detachments. So if you're talking about 150 troop berthing plus galley and food support, my guess is that is ample to cover the law enforcement detachments and the requirements. Now, you'd have other command and control elements and other kinds of things as well. But if you added, 2, 3, 4 HSVs, I mean, there's some serious capacity to do some law enforcement. I think a limiting factor would probably actually be the law enforcement detachments as opposed to the JHSV space, because it's just... then that's not an unlimited supply of the Coast Guard leadets. They're in demand all over the place.
I'm just checking my numbers here. I've seen that the max crew size, that's permanent berthing, for the JHSV is 42, although MSC's only going to put 21 on board. And that the troop berths are 104. That's 150. That's certainly enough to keep a sizable number of deaths going for a while. And... once again, unlike the LCS, the JSV has the ability to put 6 reefer boxes down, reefer containers down below for additional provisions and stores to support these debts that come on board for. And I'm kind of guessing we're probably looking at about a 21 day cycle for these things, and the difference. In the crew size between 21 and 42, well, there's your extra cooks and stewards to clean up. Your base crew is going to be with 21, and you start adding up the crew when you get into some of these longer duration, higher intensity type missions of the JHSV. By the way, the JHSV joint concept of ops is not supposed to be out till March of next year.
Yeah, I think that's humorous in the extreme, because lock us with a pony keg and a day and a half, we'll come up with them for them, no problem. But it's both of y'all mentioned something that I've been wanting to talk about. I mean, my opinion about LCS is well known, no reason to go down there. But I do find it very humorous that if you go over to NAVC under PEO LCS, they actually, they're very defensive and self-conscious. They actually have a propaganda sheet about LCS versus the joint high-speed vessel. And some of the things are rather humorous on there. They even say about survivability, LCS is military, and the joint high-speed vessel is commercial. You could do an entire show on the humor involved with that. But one worry that I have is, and we've talked about it before in previous shows, it's the unsexy disease, that if the Navy, if there's a program, it doesn't have to be a ship like command ships. It doesn't have to be an aircraft like electronic surveillance. It doesn't just have to be aircraft like electronic surveillance. Navy has a problem that when things get rough, they immediately will take money from the things that they deem that are unsexy but are critically important. And with the Navy already seeming to have a short fuse about the joint high-speed vessel perhaps taking away some of the missions that they've been using to sell LCS by, in spite of everything that we're talking about that the joint high-speed vessel brings to the table, do you perceive an institutional bias that endangers our ability, if this line of ships works out as well as its potential is, of it being strangled in the grave and not being able to actually perform what it could be able to do to protect LCS?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a potential for that. You know, the closer you get to the pointy end of the spear and the more, you know, you get more towards a combatant, the more support it's going to get in big Navy. And obviously LCS, you know, middle name being combat, not sure it's going to live up to that name, but, you know, it does have some basic weapon systems, some self-defense capability. I'm not sure that NAVC or the Navy can go too far down the road to claim that the LCS is all that survivable, because they've taken a hit with some Defense Department OT&E reporting that says that that's not the case, that it's got some potentially serious issues of survivability even after just a single hit. But, you know, the JHSV has certainly got a vulnerability issues as well. You know, it's not armed. We have that issue with all connectors, all ship-to-shore connectors, including the LCAC and LCAC follow-on. Essentially no weapon systems except maybe an M60 or the M60 follow-on you can, you know, run out there and mount on the front of the boat, you know, maybe 50 cals or whatever for very basic self-defense. So, yeah, getting back to your question, is it vulnerable potentially to the axe as an unsexy weapon system? Absolutely, yes, but I think my guess is the combatant commander requirement that's going to come through the JROC and other sources to say, I got to have this capability, is absolutely going to trump the Navy's Title 10 power to run acquisition and things like that. My guess is the combatant commander requirements will absolutely carry more weight. You know, there's plenty of examples of unsexy platforms that are too far away from the capital ships getting cut. You know, the mine countermeasures force cut down to almost nothing. Remember the PHM, the hydrofoils that would carry the Harpoon cruise missiles down in the Key West. They never really were deployed, never really were used, never really left the Caribbean theater. That you were used more for counter drugs because they just weren't. They weren't sexy enough. They weren't part of the capital ship force, and they went by the wayside and retired early and disappeared. So yeah, there's a chance for that for JHSV, but my guess is COCOMs will trump.
Lee.
Let's hope so. Let's hope so, because the unsexy ships will be needed. And it was kind of interesting that the PO ships page put up their LCS versus JHSV comparison almost immediately when somebody mentioned the similarities. And speaking from a ship acquisition standpoint, you know, we're talking about a vessel that's going to be well under $200 million a copy baseline version, and which gives you a lot of headroom to come up with some of the missions that the LCS are performing or expected to perform, I guess I should say. I think in the areas of SUW and EXW, the JHSV may well end up being a box that can be improved to perform those missions in low phase operations, and you better believe that the Blue Water Navy is going to be a little bit touchy about, we got an MSC ship that might possibly do some of our missions. Oh yeah, they're touchy.
Yeah, the other big proponent will be the Marine Corps. I should have mentioned that before. Is you'll have the Marines saying, "Got to have it." For that connector mission for the sea base, and then also because, you know, the amphibious big decks and the smaller ships have been cut low lower than what the Marines say their requirement is. So they will come to the table saying, hey, to meet this shortfall, JHSV can help a little bit. So, yeah, they certainly won't want to count it as an amphibious hull. But if they say, you guys have shorted us an amphibious lift capability, we'll do our best to use these other versatile platforms such as the JHSV. So you'll have Marine Corps proponent for this hull as well.
There's two things real quick I'll be on this. Number one, the Marines from 3MEF came up with the requirement for the original Westpac Express, or the original Westpac Express requirement, and they have become very big proponents of using this type of vessel to move around their neck of the woods. And the other thing is that you go to Bob Work and Frank Hockman's articles about theater entry operations and the scalable size of those operations. I think the JSSV will fit into that kind of mission in the future.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because the range that I've seen, and all this is really from the slide you provided to us, Lee, were the I think it was like 1,200 nautical miles, but that's at speed. And I know that we advertise these things as being self-deploying, but what are the limitations on that? If we can get into that without violating some scary policy that I know nothing about. But, I mean, how long does it take to get five of these into a theater? And once you get them there, what are the requirements for fueling? We talked about using them as connector vessels, and you talk about austere shore environments, but they do need a pier or some kind of platform to offload their cargo onto. Can you kind of go through the limitations as you see it on how these things could be used or when they can be used?
Let me give you what the Westpac Express does. And this is the standard operating mode for the administrative list. They are point-to-point ships. They're going from Naha to Upper Guam. They're fueling at both ends. They're loading and discharging very rapidly. That ship is running around like a train on a railroad track. That's how it is. They do burn fuel. They need to keep up above about 27 knots to get the ride right. The JHSV does not have the sophisticated ride control system that it needs, but they're running those at 1,100 mile legs very nicely. And about the furthest they've deployed is from Okinawa to Thailand, and they're going to have to stop off along the way and get fuel or get a drink from a naval auxiliary. Now, the Westpac Express hasn't got UNREP gear. I still have not found whether the JHV has some sort of replenishment sea capability. I'm kind of thinking it does a stern refueling, but I have not been able to pin that down. So, yeah, they're going to need fuel. They're going to be able to run 3 5-day missions, that is, underway missions. They probably shouldn't go where the threat levels kick up without some sort of escort.
Yeah, if I can add, looking over some documents here today before this session, it's clearly a limitation. They're not going to be able to do the UNREP. They've taken that requirement off the board. So the example of the JSV is that they could do some limited astern refueling, but not alongside, a tensioned rig UNREP. They can't do that. So it's essentially bunkering in port or, modified astern refueling, which is a little harder, and frankly, the bigger replenishment ships are going to be busy with the capital ships, with the strike groups, the carrier strike groups that get the priority. So, yeah, you're going to have to bunker in port. Now, you can do some creative things with that very large cargo space on the JHSV. And Marines are no strangers to fuel bladders and other innovative ways to get some longer legs out of it. Point-to-point runs, you probably don't need that, but you're talking about longer endurance missions, like, say, that anti-piracy within Somali territorial waters, within the 12-mile limit, lingering for weeks on end. That would become more of an issue where you really would have to have some kind of a large container with fuel bladder in it for extended fuel, because now you're talking about refueling helicopters potentially and ribs and other things, and that's the big problem they're having right now, based on some discussions I've had with some folks that talked to the LCS crew, is not so much the fuel for the for the ship, that's the big problem over time. It is the fuel. It's the fuel supporting the helicopters, and the other vehicles, et cetera, ribs, smaller boats. That is, when you add that to the requirements of the hull, the fuel becomes an issue very quickly.
I happen to have put boat fueling stations and boat fueling systems onto MSC ships dozens of times, and I'm telling you that this is a very simple solution to JHSV. You get yourself an ISO tank container with carrying about 25,000 gallons of fuel. You plant it on board. You put in a fuel transfer system, and then you have what I would call mission POL capability. You might be able to work it into the ship POL system. That's an engineering detail I don't know, but you sure as heck can support the debts on board from a tank container of DFM plunked down on the mission deck.
Yeah, I guess, you know, we talk about naming the ship. When you look at the memorandum of agreement between the Army and the Navy for the transfer of the Army ships over to the Navy, the Army got its final dig in paragraph 9. They said that the JHSV-1 will remain as Spearhead, so maybe we can just call it the Spearhead class, which, hey, it's battle-mindedness type of name. That works, no problem. But an interesting thing, John, when you look at paragraph 7, it states, the Army will retain authorized in-strength and will not transfer any force structure. The MSC will crew either civilian mariners or contract mariners. And working with the Army a lot, one thing the Army and really the Marine Corps as well does very well, in my opinion, is utilization of their reserves, especially the Army with the Army Reserve and the National Guard. When you look at the U.S. Navy Reserve, especially nowadays, many times you see a lot of underutilization of human capital, to use a bunch of fancy words, of not being as useful perhaps for per unit dollar that an Army or National Guard person has. Are there some potential uses, you think, of not just having these military sealift command ships, but to find some use, perhaps with an additional buy of ships, to have these in the U.S. Naval Reserve to provide a surge capacity in certain mission areas that you may not want to have a civilian manned ship be involved in?
I think this absolutely seems like that would be very useful for that. Of course, you know, the Navy, when they leased the JSV, the Navy crewed it with uniformed members, and they found it got a lot of utility in it. They've written a couple of skippers have written a few articles for Proceedings and said there was quite a lot of utility, and they were against the idea of a non-uniformed crew, contract or otherwise, or MSC. That is an issue, and that is a problem. Developing that niche capability with the reserves for maybe one unit or a larger unit to actually, you know, man those out, crew, qualify on them, that would be very wise. And it would strike me that, you know, we already have that in existence with support with the NECC mission. It might fit in that niche a little bit, but I don't know. It'd be kind of tough. That is the one weakness in the plan for these ships that I think is something they're going to have to get around. If, you know, with the civilian crew, with the, you know, the union is, and the legalities of arming them and things like that, that is a real problem if you got to bring that into a combat zone. So we've got to have some kind of contingency where we can't just say, "Oh, sorry, we're not coming in." We have to have some plan to man these things with guys that can go into a combat zone. And, you know, fire weapons and defend themselves, et cetera. So it seems to me like we better have a plan for that.
You're stepping on a nerve there, but let me try to keep it cool. First off, there are no union restrictions for USNS ships going into war zones. In point of fact, we've never had civil service mariners impede the movement of MSC of USNS ships into war zone. What has been the impediment is the Navy is all over the page about who to put on board to man the weapons that are already on Naval Fleet Auxiliary Force ships. It's going around six different variations in the time I've been around. The Navy can't figure out who the hell to put on them. Okay, so there is a solution to that, but that's another topic, and we'll cover that at a different point in time. Now, as far as using the ship and putting sailors on board, I proposed that we have an armed naval auxiliary and perhaps put a sailor crew on those, or possibly reserve crew on them, and these be basically upgraded, upgunned JHS fees that are intended for these missions that are a higher order of threat and may need a full weapons suite installed and more sensors, and be able to go perhaps even into harm's way. We don't know, but at least there's a path there. There's a tangent that I think the JHSV design could be taken to.
Yeah, absolutely. With the union comment, that was more really pointing towards the idea of hours and extended operation, things like that. You know, if they have, there's very clear rules with the civilians, like how many hours they have to work. They can only work each day, paying overtime, those kind of things, and they just become a little more dicey in long extended operations in combat zones.
See, that's the difference between the 41 person crew that the MSC is planning for as a baseline crew, and the 42 berthing spaces for crew that gives them the surge factor. They can kick that up in two different ways. They can add to base crew. Remember, MSC has the flexibility to change the size of his crew on the drop of a hat. It's not like the Navy. And secondly, MSC ships usually have, or frequently have, military departments on board, headed up by anything from a Navy Supply Corps commander on down to a chief petty officer, and they can put on a tailored military department to fit a different kind of mission, which gives them some extended operations capability.
Well, speaking of that, we also see that the advertising for the JHSV indicates that they can carry the H-60s and up to an H-53, I guess, for some sort of operation. What's the thinking about using these as either logistics platform transfer using the helicopters like the H-60 Sierra for UNRWAP purposes, and is this another way to extend
Let me tell you exactly what was the case with the Westpac Express. The Marines wanted to be able to drive their helicopters on board the Westpac Express and move them by sea lift from point A to point B, because it kept down the helicopter, the operating hours on the helos. They wanted to be able to drive them instead of fly them there. Yes, they got in their Hueys. Yes, with some little bit of takedown, they got their 46s on board. They couldn't get their 53s on board. We actively looked at the 125-meter Austal design that had greater underdeck height, because you could drive a 53 into the mission deck on that vessel, and the Marines said, God, we can drive the 53s instead of fly them from Okinawa to Korea, for instance, or Okinawa to Thailand, for instance. They were just wetting their chops. But I noticed in the JHSV specs that the underdeck height is only 15.6 feet. I don't think that's tall enough for a 53. But, oh, yeah, 3MAF would have loved to be able to use these as helicopter carriers under deck.
Yeah, I see a lot of versatility from the helicopter from up to a 53, more along the lines away from transport but to operational use. Just imagine an armed helicopter, even perhaps a Marine Corps gunship being used on this for extended ops in Somali territory waters or some other kind of, austere environment where you need not just self-protection but maybe just a quick bit of offensive capability. The armed helo associated with the LCS, same model could be used on the JHSV. There are shortcomings, though. No hangar on the JHSV. I guess that wasn't in the works. They did have a hangar on JSV and had a lot of utility in that, with some limited maintenance and shelter, et cetera. You're not going to have that on the JHSV, so that is certainly a limitation. you know, in the saltwater environment, et cetera. But, you know, that 53 capable, you know, you could haul a lot of logistics with the 53 alone. So, for example, imagine that JHSV off the shore of Somalia for, you know, weeks at a time. You can bring an awful lot of fresh fruit and vegetable and other logistics support out to the JHSV, even fuel bladders via the 53 to extend the endurance of the hull itself. So, and lastly, I would say ISR. You bring the new versions of the 60 have really very good ISR capability. You know, with the radars and the optics, et cetera, and you can if you add even just a very low end, perhaps UAV. I mean, you could really extend your eyes around that JHSV very nicely with a helicopter or other unmanned vehicles.
Yes, the JHSV could well serve as a lily pad for helicopter operations. Boy, this brought me back to being on the AGP in Nam. I spent some time on them, and the PBRs were alongside, and the Huey Seawolf gunships were flying. Were the primary helicopter assets on board the ships, and they are flying all the time. And the ship was sitting off the coast of Nam. And how was it being resupplied? It was being resupplied by H-46 Navy H-46s from upcountry, bringing in the provisions, et cetera, et cetera. And whenever we needed something big brought on board, we'd get a Chinook would come in and land, almost land. two-wheel landing and bring it to life. But that model's already been tested and done, and yes, the JHSV could follow on from that.
I think that's one of the go ahead, Ilan. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to follow on. Maybe a silly question, but is there access to the internal decks from the flight deck? I mean, is it break everything down and carry it down a ladder, or is there a ramp or something from that flight deck on down into the internal
Eagle One? You got a good point there, and this is the significant difference. This is another significant difference between the LCS and the JHSV. The JHSV has a quarter a hydraulic crane, what we call a knuckle crane, on the port quarter. That crane can pick up 27,000 pounds off the flight deck and move it down to the water or down to the pier or stuff it into the mission deck. So for big stuff, yes. Originally, the JHSV design had an elevator, a 22 or 26,000 pound elevator in it. That dropped out. I think it could be retrofitted into the design. That would give you a lot of capability of moving cargo from the mission deck to the flight deck. The LCS has an elevator, 8,000 pounds, not even big enough to pick up a container. The LCS-1 has zero elevators. Very good point, Eagle.
Yeah, the point you made about Vietnam there, Lee, you know, brought up to one of the things that I find very interesting about this platform is the fact that really nothing that we're talking about here is new. Now, it's new to those that are under age 55, perhaps, but you don't have to reach back too far in the bar to find somebody who has actually done these things. And I think one of the interesting things about this platform and why people have an interest in it is its inherent flexibility and your ability. And I can hear the LCS church right now trying to have a hallelujah moment, but there's a difference between having an open architecture flexibility and having a mandated limited flexibility, which is what we have with LCS. But another thing that history tells us with these ships, you can go back to the DEs in World War II or even the British experience in the Falklands and even things today, is in peacetime, you never have enough guns or large enough guns that you think you need. You know, the old Flower-class Corvette in World War II started off with a 3-inch, wound up with a 5-inch, et cetera, et cetera. And when you look at the Spearhead class, well, I'll try to do that because I don't do acronyms very well. It has 450 caliber guns, which are great. I love the M2 as much as anybody. But with the danger, there looks like there's enough deck space, enough flexibility, that you really wouldn't be in danger of overloading something if you went with the Mark 38 25 millimeter K Canon, which is manually guided, of course, with a guy behind it, or even the Mark 46 30mm Canon. Would that be something at this stage of the game, if people are looking to expand this besides just a moving Marines from point A to point B, that we may want to look at? And if so, do you see there that being much of an engineering challenge to be able to put those on board these ships?
I've already gone around this in the warboats crowd and with some of the technical experts in the HPMV field, and we feel that it was not a problem at all to kick up the those are not bare 50 mounts, they're ROSAM mounts. So going from a remote operated mount to actually the Mark 38 Mod 2, which is also a remote system, is pretty daggone easy. So you got places for four kicked up mounts already in the design. That's there. The question is, can we have gone around on, and I've seen some suggestions by Master Gunner about putting in any air missiles on board a very small mount. And some other things. There's questions as to whether you could go up to CRAM or CWIS or one of those. I think that there's going to be some structural issues up top side, but that's still a technical detail that I have not resolved. And when I get it resolved, I'll send it out to all you guys.
Yeah, I think I would concur. I think that would be a good idea to do that. You need something a little bit bigger than a 50, especially, you know, I keep going back to that anti-piracy mission in coastal waters. If you needed to have a little bit more punch and a little bit more distance with an explosive, you know, exploding shell, not just the ball round of the M2, you would need that. Now, having said that, I would caution, don't go any more beyond that, because if you start strapping too many weapon systems onto the hull, we're going to start to suffer the LCS syndrome, you know, too many missions on a very small, simple hull.
Amen.
So, yeah, I wouldn't go too far down that road. I wouldn't go any higher than the 25 millimeter, you know, the Bushmaster type, relatively simple weapon, easy to use, but bigger punch, longer range, you know, and more versatility in the type of rounds you can use.
That's very much doable.
And we got, you know, man pads and other things we can use for point air defense. But, you know, the simple truth is you're not going to put this thing in a high-threat environment. It'll be escorted in some fashion, whether that be, you know, armed helo like the Vietnam example or otherwise, or maybe, you know, ironically, maybe an LCS would escort it.
I saw a certain former Marine make allusions to that, about an LCS supporting a JHSV or a group or several JHSVs on a littoral mission. At the time it sounded like a good idea, but then having looked into the LCS weapons suite subsequently, I said, that might be a wishful thinking.
Well, speaking of weapons suites and armed helicopters, I love the Sea Cobra. The radar systems on this thing, as I understand, are COTS, you know, X and S band radar or something. I mean, it's kind of the normal thing. Is there any thought to some kind of air search, portable air search radar to put on this thing if we're going to do serious helicopter operations?
I think it's doable. I think that the spaces are there, and physical structures there, we might bump into the problem that John alluded to, and that the Navy might all of a sudden get kind of leery of having a sealift ship with that kind of suite on board.
John?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm that's a little bit out of my area of expertise, and I would be speculating. But my guess is that, you know, the topside weight, the extra computer racks and electronics. It's not just the radar. There's a lot of associated equipment. And then if you skip, it's more. You know, it's not just your easy COTS, you know, navigation surface radar. More crew necessary to focus on that kind of thing with the consoles in combat. And that might be, my personal view is that's going too far in the direction of. Where you don't need to go to try to create a multi-mission ship, probably have to have the escort do that kind of mission.
Yeah, I think the LCS disease is exactly what you're talking about. And there's many examples of good programs and bad programs, and good programs always have somebody willing to go, no, we're not doing that. And speaking of one of the real, we talked about some great things that this ship could possibly do, but you know, one of the brutal truths is when you get inside the Beltway, the politicians both wearing uniforms and not wearing uniforms are the ones that are going to make the difference, are going to either kill or grow a program, make it a success or make it a failure in many times. And I have an automated Google search on LCS, no shock there. And a lot of the things that come up for me involve politicians and jobs with LCS. And, of course, you get the usual stuff out of the Navy PAO office about LCS as well. You don't see that much for this ship. A couple of questions. One, is there an identifiable member of Congress that is an advocate for this ship at the Hill? But secondly, if those in the Navy who want to who are believers in this ship and what it could possibly do, where do they need to be making sure that this gets the funding and attention it needs to not be strangled in the grave? Cradle, excuse me.
Who what? I'm not going to touch politics first. Should somebody else hit that? Because I got a distinct comment on it. I guarantee you that the good Congress folks from Alabama will be touting the advantages of the JHSV to a fare thee well, whether they know how the ship operates or not. The problem on the naval side of it is that Military Sea of Command has been dropped down on an echelon, and he has to go through Fleet Forces Command to make to have any advocacy for this type of vessel. So the type commander for Sealift, who will be actually operating these ships, is buried so far down the chain of command, he'll have little ability to really tout the features and the effectiveness of the vessel. I don't see it, and the Navy's already talking about cutting the purchases or the hull buy. I don't see the Navy supporting this valuable tactical Sealift asset strenuously.
I agree, but those Alabama senators and congressmen that support the Austell plant down there, they have an equal vested interest in the JHSV. I think the industry is caught between a rock and a hard place, as I forget who mentioned it a few minutes ago, but it's the same company is making a version of the LCS as well as the JHSV, so there's going to be some, well, which one do you want? Well, the industry is going to want to convince everybody you want both, and the congressmen and senators will be as well. So you'll have some significant constituents behind, money-wise, behind both. But DOD and the president aren't going to be able to afford both, so that's going to be an interesting dynamic as that occurs.
Excellent point. There is a dynamic, and what I'm saying is that the constituency will be in the ship building community where the vessels are being built, and not for the Sealift proponency, which is the mission end of the requirement.
And John and Lee, we've just got about a minute left here. If there was somebody in the audience who wanted to learn some more about Joint High Speed Vessel, or for that matter, logistics, where would you point them to real fast? John, we'll start
I would
with
say
you.
Use the search function on the United States Naval Institute website. Lots of capability to go back and look at the previous articles, excellent articles on JHSV, JSV, intra-theater lift, logistics, the lower-end missions associated with things like the phase zero shaping engagement, et cetera, global fleet stations, a rich resource in the Naval Institute.
Lee?
That's fine. Unfortunately, you're not going to find much in the Navy PEO ships area by this, and MSC has not got their they just got the full handle on this, and they have not gotten any they're kind of a little bit backward when it comes to getting this kind of information out. So I don't see anything on that side of the house.
Well, Lee, why don't you go box their ears and get them with the program, and we're running out of time, so John and Lee, thank you very much for taking time this Sunday to join us on Midrats along with all of our listeners.
My pleasure. Love the show.
It's been a great time.
Thank you, gentlemen. Enjoy it.
Hope everybody has a great Navy Day. We'll see you next week.
Okay, take care. Out here. Out here.
Mike Maloney wants to marry me, and so leave the stranded.